I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central podcast brought to you today by Velocity Group and HPE Financial Services. I'm joined now for this discussion by Jonathan Kropf, and he is CEO of Velocity Group, and also by Anton Pau, who is Finance Area Manager for HP Financial Services. Gentlemen, welcome to the podcast, and thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Thanks, Duncan.
Now, our discussion today is on a new approach to getting the right technology. As I think I've said more than one occasion on this podcast in the last few weeks, 2020 has been an extraordinary year, an exceptional year, often for all the wrong reasons. And not just because we were hit by a global pandemic, but in the IT sector, because the ways of working have changed quite fundamentally during the course of this year. And it's also changed for many companies their IT spending priorities. In some instances, I'd argue that companies have had to divert funding just to keep the lights on or to keep their employees productive at home. But for others, it's meant shifting gears on digital transformation, or perhaps starting to talk about digital transformation for the very first time. Businesses have also needed to change their mindsets this year in terms of how they fund their technology assets. They've realized that just because they've followed the traditional finance route in the past does not mean it is the right strategy for today. And that's something we're going to explore in some detail in this discussion today with both Anton and Jonathan. But before we get there, Jonathan, let me just put you on a spot for the moment and ask you a little bit about Velocity Group. For people who don't know the company, what is it you guys do? What is your focus area in the South African market? And also, what is your relationship with HPE?
Sure. So Velocity Group started 13 years ago now, primarily as an infrastructure supplier, and that's where our relationship with HPE actually started. Was way back 13 years ago when I started the business. Okay. Our focus is in the corporate, kind of the mid-market corporate space. And we've got about 400 or so customers in that kind of realm that we deal with. And over the years, we've kind of changed what we do and how we do it to really focus on hybrid IT enablement. And that means making sure that customers are leveraging, you know, the good things in the public cloud world, as well as, the good things in the on-premises world, and then getting those two areas to work together. Cause it's not just about having a public cloud or having a public cloud strategy or having an on-premises strategy. The reality is that there's a mixture of both always. Right. So, you know, how do we guide our customers to basically get that to work securely, efficiently, and choose the best technology for their need? And that's what we're doing today. You know, we embarked on that strategy 3 or 4 years ago. And really it's landing well with our customers, because there is a lot of confusion out there about what to do.
Yeah, for sure. So how big is Velocity Group? How many employees do you have? Do you have offices around the country? And are there particular sectors you focus on?
Yeah, about 40 people. Okay. Offices in Joburg, Cape Town, and Durban. Sectors, very broad. Hey? I mean, with 400 customers, we've got quite a broad subset of customers. I think from the industry's perspective, quite well entrenched in the mid-market financial services, being the smaller banks and insurance companies. As well as in hospitality and logistics. If I could pick out a subset of customers, that's probably where we would have the highest concentration.
Fantastic. Okay, so Jonathan, the discussion today is largely going to be about IT financing and why you should consider this, and some of the discussion points around this that I think companies perhaps aren't fully cognizant of. Let's say I'm a CIO of a major South African company. I'm listening to this podcast or watching it today. Why should I care about IT financing, especially in the current economic environment?
It's a very good question. And I think in South Africa, we probably should have been asking this question a lot more, but the kind of pandemic that we're facing has really driven people to do things differently in their business. They've had to react quite quickly to get a mobile workforce in place, to get applications accessible from outside, for these people to actually work without being in an office. Mm-hmm. And it's put a strain on customers, both from a financial perspective, to get those projects up and going, but it's really also driven that digital disruption, the digital transformation within the organization. So it's been that disruptor to drive that transformation. Mm-hmm. And if you look at how we consume typically, or how we typically consumed IT, it's been, in South Africa, it's been very CapEx heavy. You know, we spend our money on the equipment. But that's been forced to change. We've had to now well, businesses have had to now change that spend focus and rather spend it on things like consulting fees to get applications working better or get applications implemented, or on management consultants to change their business versus actually spending it on a piece of hardware ultimately.
Yeah. So, I mean, what are some of the models, financing models that companies should be aware of, and what which of these models makes most sense given the current economic conditions?
Yeah, I think that the term financing becomes a bit of a I don't know what the term is. It's kind of a
red herring.
A red herring, because it's not about it's not about financing. It's about doing things smarter. Okay. And with HPE Financial Services specifically, there's some great ways of looking at consumption based financing where you're not right. just taking a let's say a 3 million rand server and storage solution and financing it over 36 months or 60 months, and you come up with a payment and maybe there's a balloon and you finance it like a typical financing model. It's about how do I buy what I need now, consume what I need now, and grow with that as I go, mm-hmm. Versus buying it all up front for the next 5 years. And because you don't know. I mean, 2 years ago, we would never have said that something like this would happen.
Yeah.
You know, who would have thought a global pandemic would change the way that businesses operate and take some out of the equation completely?
Yes.
So be a lot more flexible in the way that you actually procure IT. And that might not be just in terms of buying things that are on-premise, but how do you leverage the consumption-based public cloud services as well as consumption-based services on-site to come up with a solution that that makes sense, that gives you the flexibility and the agility to actually react when you need to and not have your CapEx tied up.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Flexibility is the key word here. But Anton, let's bring you into the discussion. Can you tell us a little bit about the consumption-based model offered by HPE Financial Services and what this means for companies looking to invest in new technology solutions?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Duncan. And I think absolutely to what Jonathan's mentioned is that the view financing is kind of antiquated at this point, because the reality of tech and the tech estate in any organization is that it moves so quickly and it requires such a high level of flexibility and adaptability that the traditional view of it's an asset and an investment and you either purchase it up front outright with cash resources of the business, or alternatively you finance it, is it's already old by the time you've used it for a month or two.
Yeah.
It's really all about flexibility and being able to adapt the business to what is required and only utilizing and consuming what's needed. And I think as consumers, we've been spoiled for choice in terms of being able to access things like cell phone agreements, mobile contracts with handsets attached to it, and cloud-based services like Gmail and Photos and music services, Spotify, Apple, etc. We're consuming from the cloud, Uber, all of that. It's those applications don't run on our PCs. They don't run on our infrastructure. They run in the cloud. So that's made us all a lot more comfortable with consuming tech, as yeah. opposed to owning it, right? And even something as simple as a handset nowadays, think about the guy that whips out his latest and greatest cell phone in the shops or in the restaurant right next to you. No, none of us really care or know what that handset is. It looks, the version 11 and the 12 looks the same as the version 6 and the 7. The bottom line is it needs to run the apps that it needs to run, right? And customers care much less now than ever before about what it is that it runs on, as long as it works. And I think, too, that the entire mindset around what's the speeds and the feeds I should be provisioning for the next 3 year or 4 year or 5 year life cycle of my tech estate has shifted to, I don't really care as long as it works and as long as I can pay for it as I use it and as long as it doesn't cost me a fortune. That makes it easier for the business to plan ahead and to stay ahead of flexible kind of cyclical changes in the requirements. So, for instance, an organization might have seasonal needs in terms of a spike in storage requirements, and then it might dip down again, or they might have additional compliance requirements that force them to up in a big way what kind of data they process and how they store it and take care of it. And all of that is, if you look at acts like the POPI Act and all of the global GDPRA or GDPR compliance acts, et cetera, that requires organizations formally to retain data for much longer, and then they tweak it again, and then they tweak it again. And constantly there's this shift in how much data will I need to handle, at what point will I need to handle it. And the cloud has given that to organizations, right? It's given them a way to, once you've done all the hard yards and shifted the workload, you can actually tweak it up and down. And more importantly, you can pay for just the right amount at the right time when it's actually consumed. You don't have to provision a certain amount of capacity, yet you only use it 3 or 4 or 5 years down the line. And I think what the hybrid world has realized is that, look, the hybrid and edge tech estate is very much alive and more well than it's ever been in terms of very specific workload requirements at the edge and in hybrid fashion. And the CFO isn't really interested in that. He's interested in a palatable way for the organization to consume these resources, whether it's on-premise. Most CFOs wouldn't care or wouldn't mind. The boards don't care if it's on-premise or in the cloud. It should be secure. It should be safe. It should do the job, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the importance of all of that is, from an investment capacity point of view, COVID's now suddenly accelerated that. Like before COVID, there was this distinct approach by organizations to procure anything that's in their own data center or in a hosted data center, procure that from an outright point of view. And then they'll pay for use whatever's in the cloud. And suddenly the pressure from a financial standpoint and with all of the cash preservation methods that are being enforced in organizations in order to keep the lights on while COVID is raging is that, hang on, now whatever has been hybrid and purchased upfront in the past, we need to find a way to also pay for that on a pay-for-use or an as-a-service basis. So it is really about going beyond the actual financing agreement, which is still something we do in the industry today, but moving it towards a digital consumption space. And if the organization has the ability to consume as and when needed, flex up and flex down, that creates in return investment capacity for them, right? They've got now working capital and cash that they can go and apply where it's really needed, growing a sales team, paying the rent, getting through the tough times without having to spend it on depreciating and, well, rapidly depreciating tech estate.
Yeah. And
I think, Anton, sorry, Duncan, I just wanted to jump in there. I think that the attitude has changed as well in the market because of the way cloud has been adopted quite widespread. The kind of notion of paying for something as you use it is much wider adopted now. And people are looking at that for their own internal IT consumption. And businesses traditionally have always done that, right? Big businesses don't necessarily own their own buildings. It's not their business to be a real estate company. So they give that to somebody who knows what they're doing and they pay a fee per month to rent it. Mm-hmm. Might be built to their specifications, sure, but they get the ultimate use out of it. And that's really what they care about. So the market's really turning between this kind of consumption-based cloud computing way that's been pushed down on us and people realizing that we don't actually have to own this stuff. Mm. You know, we can still make use of it. We don't have to own it. It's really – we're seeing a groundswell in the way that customers are financing or looking at financing the technology.
So, Jonathan,
I think it's absolutely the – sorry to interrupt, Duncan. I think it's that notion about accessing – the technology is rapidly becoming much more important than owning it. It's something we mention often, but customers grapple with the sense of should I or should I not be, because where does financing stop and where does consumption start? And that's really what we and our partners like Velocity are out to set out to do in the customer space, is to create a clear understanding through the channel of what offerings are available and where do we draw the line between the traditional of finance and procure upfront as opposed to what is consumption and how does it work and how do the contracts differ, et cetera.
So Anton, does this mean the end of overspending on IT infrastructure? I know that companies in the past have had to over-provision in many respects or have over-provisioned by mistake, not anticipating the amount of demand they would have on that infrastructure. Do you think this is going to resolve that entirely?
Look, it's obviously a journey, right? With everything, if we look at the way that cloud has evolved over just the last 5 to 10 years, it's been massive. And what we called cloud 10 years ago isn't what cloud is today. Yeah. And in the same way, the hybrid workspace and the edge isn't evolving from a financial accessibility point of view necessarily in the directions where we would have expected it to go. And I think a lot of the current focus is to cater for those that are grappling with a situation where they've overspent on certain capacity. They might only unlock this at a later stage. They will unlock it, but they didn't need it on day one. Yet there wasn't a way available or a platform available to structure, scope, or specify a solution in such a way that they could add on capacity later or activate capacity later. So they went ahead They dropped a big, big load of money on a certain capacity or data center upgrade, let's say in December 2019 or January 2020. And right after that came COVID, and suddenly they were kind of kicking themselves because we've just spent hugely on a tech estate and it's now biting us. So a big part of what we're doing is to look at the current tech estate, and we call it accelerated migration. The more archaic term for it used to be sale and leaseback, but of course, being services-based agreements, we tend to look at that estate integrated back into an as-a-service solution or consumption-based agreement. And the end result for the customer is that we free up that locked capital back into the organization. So we have a way to ascertain value. And the aim is, of course, to, if it's reasonably young, still that equipment, 6-12 months even, is to be able to recapitalize the organization at the original price paid for that tech estate.
Right.
We then integrate it into a services or consumption-based environment, and the customer gets to now use it as and when they need it and pay for it as and when they use it. And it's all about matching the revenue that and the productivity that a solution like that unlocks for the organization, paying for it as that revenue gets delivered.
Are these consumption-based models suitable for every type of enterprise, or are there exceptions to the rule?
Look, no, certainly not. I think the important thing to realize is that as with look at things like the vehicle market, there are still very good use cases for organizations or individuals going out and purchasing a vehicle cash upfront outright with a certain use case in mind. And then there's a very good use case scenario for those that need fleets, short-term cycles, maybe fleets that work hard, high mileage fleets need to be replaced more often. Capacity growth in IT works the same way. In some instances where the requirement is more elementary, and that's more Jonathan's space in terms of what is needed and how they determine the exact use and project what it would look like over time. But there are still scenarios where a more traditional method of financing is required. And none of that has left us. It's still with us. We still actively engage on more traditional financing structures. But at the same time, we're evolving to a more advanced way of packaging technology to be more palatable from not only I consume it now per teraflop or terabyte or node that I'm using as opposed to clock cycles, etc.
Sure.
At the same time, they're able to pallet it in terms of financials. I'm paying X amount per terabyte or an X amount per month for a node. And if I expand, this will be my cost. So the tiering is fixed up front. Customers will know exactly what they're in for if they need to increase capacity.
Jonathan, maybe at this point I could ask you to jump in and elaborate just a little bit on some of the benefits that consumption-based models can deliver to end-user customers.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've spoken a little bit about it. I mean, in terms of the old way was you had to look at what your consumption was going to be for the next 3 to 5 years and buy accordingly because it was very difficult to upgrade the equipment either from a technical perspective or from a finance perspective. That's changed. You know, you can quite easily kick off with what you need now, like you would in the cloud world, in on-premises equipment, and upgrade that as you go. I think that mindset needs to change quite a bit still, in terms of I don't have to buy it up front or now. And I think the business or the boards would appreciate that view. And I think probably a little bit needs to change in the IT space of what needs to be done in terms of that, because you can just buy what you need now.
Yeah.
And you know, looking at an IT department, what is their function? Their function is to deliver value to the business through the applications that the business uses to generate more business. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, that's what an IT department's function is. It's not to keep the lights on and it's not to run a stack of tin. They support the business.
Yeah.
And the business is dictating that things change. So, you know, IT departments and CIOs are going to have to change with that at some point. And we can see that happening. Yeah.
So are we going to see more peace between CIOs and CFOs going forward, Jonathan?
I think so. Hey? I once did a talk on how the CIO is going to be the next CEO because the CIO has to change to be more business orientated. The CIO of 5, 6, 7 years ago was a technology orientated person. Now I know of CIOs who aren't technology people whatsoever. They know some acronyms, but they know what the business needs to get out of IT, and it's their job to get that.
Yeah.
So the CIO's role has most certainly changed, and I think the CIO and the CFO, there used to always be a friction between IT and finance, and that's definitely going away. It's much more closer together now.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Anton, do you concur with that view? Do you think that the way the internal IT function has traditionally interfaced with the rest of the organization, which can in the past have been fairly acrimonious at times, do you think there's going to be a change in that nature of that relationship going forward because of the changes we've seen happening just this very year?
Yeah, I believe it's obviously hugely debated in terms of certain organizations or industries where there's more pressure as technology becomes kind of the forefront of transformation. Like in most instances, technology is the key to become a better business and delivering more value to your customers. And in some other spaces, it isn't. But in most instances, it is. And whether it's kind of second tier to what the product offering actually is, whether it's first and foremost, think about banking, healthcare, et cetera. It's without technology, there is no platform, right? And I think to the discussion around the CFO and the CIO, we've recently seen more and more material being circulated on portals like LinkedIn and by a research nose like Gartner and IDC around a CIFO, which really will become the next kind of transformation leader in the future. It'll be someone that's versed very well on the financial and on the technological side of things. And it'll be a strategic thinker that takes decisions conscience of the actual financial implication and with a roadmap of what the transformation status of the organization needs to be. So that chief information financial officer, today it's two people, but it might very well become one in future. And I think the beauty of consumption-based technology is that it simplifies the discussion to what Jonathan mentioned, that organizations don't want to worry about managing tin any longer and the electricity it consumes, etc. They need to plan beyond that, far beyond that. And that's where our partners such as Velocity also help us to manage that bridge, because traditionally we are still a hardware manufacturer with a few layers of services. But what connects this to the space out there and connects us to the customers is the value from a consulting point of view that the partners add to this.
Okay. Now, Anton, I think let's take a step back at this juncture. If you don't mind, maybe just give us an overview of the models that HPE Financial Services offers in the South African market, and maybe also some of the value adds that the organization offers to local enterprises.
Sure. This was back in April, May already, where the announcement came worldwide from HPE that by means of HPFS, it made a $2 billion fund, specifically pool of funds available for relief funding aimed towards customers struggling, new or existing customers struggling from a cash flow and budgeting point of view through COVID. The wheel keeps on turning, right? The last thing we want to have is a world that wakes up to a V-shaped curve, recovery curve post-COVID, and they've been left behind or left in the dust when it comes to being technologically relevant and competitive. So this $2 billion relief fund is applied in many different ways, either to the existing customers to restructure and reshape their exposure, and of course to rejuvenate certain structures where if a customer would even look at an existing financial year and the next 8 to 12 months of payments towards a specific technology platform would still be too high, even if it's spread over term, over time, then there's a structure called the immediate payment relief structure, which would give customers up to 8 months of very low payments, and literally to the number, it would be 1% of the total solution value for the first 8 months, whereafter it would be followed by a normal payment curve. And the upside of that is in the traditional banking space, that kind of payment deferral would end up with the customer having to pay the price for it, right? Increased interest rates, et cetera, over time. And with HPFS, it in fact isn't. We do carry that additional cost that we incur to defer and delay those payments on ourselves. It's a true, honest, and transparent offer to try and get the technology cycles going, to get the confidence back into the market that customers can embark on these transformation journeys now. They don't have to wait until next year or beyond. And then hand in hand with that is what I've mentioned earlier on. There's a more simplified, an extended deployment structure, which really is just allowing a customer to finish a deployment cycle. No one wants to pay for something before it's delivered or working in full, right?
Right.
And all this really allows us for customers to deploy a specific project, get to a project deadline and a date, have full delivery of the solution before they have to start paying for it. Typically 90-day periods, in some instances longer, and that wouldn't require the customer to make any form of payment until the lights are on and everything's ticking. And then one that I've touched on is also the accelerated migration, of course. We're looking to plow back locked capital into the organizations. We look at wherever they've spent outright funding and resources over the last 6 months or so, up to 12 months. And if it's any older than that, there's still a structure for that. It would potentially, because of the way that asset depreciation works, it would potentially still encounter some depreciation on that estate. But we're always able to find value for the right kind of scenario and with the right technology platform proposed.
Jonathan, maybe take us through how Velocity Group works, how you work with HPE Financial Services and then work with your enterprise customers in bringing these solutions to market. How do you, for example, help customers to determine what the right consumption model is that they should be using?
Yeah, so it's tricky. You know, we've got 400 customers across quite a wide segment of or wide array of industries. So there's a lot of different ways of approaching things that we see. So it really comes down to sitting down with the customer and understanding, number one, workload applicability.
Yeah.
So where does it make sense for that workload to go? Is it something that has to be on premises? Or is it something that could be in the cloud? And if it could be in the cloud, does the consumption-based model of cloud make sense? And vice versa, to on-premise. And then looking at the organization, how ready is the organization to take on this consumption-based way of doing things? If it's a very, very legacy-orientated IT department, there might be a bridge too far to move to a consumption-based model. But we work with the customers to identify that and actually do some introspection and acknowledge where they are in that cycle and how they can adopt technology and do they want to change the way they do things, and then assist with that change based on some of the learnings we've got from our customers.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you mentioned at the beginning of the podcast that you have about 400 customers around the country. I imagine those customers are doing things in different ways to suit the environments that they operate in. That was bringing an interesting perspective and quite a lot of debate within the organization about the best approaches to this topic.
Absolutely. And we don't only have customers in South Africa. We've got customers into 15 different countries in Africa.
Okay.
And some of them large multinationals. So we've got the view of some very large multinationals, along with some, you know, smaller entrepreneurial type companies. And the way that they approach it is very different and sometimes inversely to what you would think. You know, the larger organizations and the larger international companies are reacting quicker and some of the smaller organizations are reacting slower out of maybe fear of doing the wrong thing and the impact that it has. So we have to work quite closely with them to determine, as I said, the right way that it works for them. And we've seen some really good projects come out of this COVID pandemic. You know, guys who turned on a mobile workforce in 2 days, migrated to the cloud in 2 days, some of the key workloads. It's been fantastic. Obviously, a lot of work. But it's been great. And then we've seen the converse of customers who just haven't reacted and they're feeling the pain now. And they should have possibly taken advantage of some of these programs from an HBFS perspective to make those investments and change. And they're feeling it. We've also seen some customers who've done that rapid reaction to getting their workforce mobile, but it was a kind of interim step. And now they have to deal with the ramifications of actually saying, well, our workforce is possibly going to stay mobile for a very long time because they can. So now how do we take these projects that we kind of spook and pluck together to get their staff mobile and make them a long-term proposition? And that requires investment, unfortunately. And not just investment in infrastructure, investment in services, investment in systems, and things that they wouldn't ordinarily have been able to spend money on before. Now they're looking for new ways to do that.
I imagine you guys must be playing a consulting and advisory role to your clients as well. Are you finding that, and do you think that's becoming a more prevalent thing across the IT industry?
Absolutely. I think, you know, the days of just moving a piece of hardware because the customer said so or asked for it, it's gone. You know, the requirement now is to ask why. You know, why are you buying this? What are you using it for? Is this the best thing to do? And, you know, in the past, those might have been questions that offended the customer. Now I think they're appreciating it.
Yeah.
Because you're not just sending a piece of hardware off or saying, yes, we'll put this in Azure or whatever the case may be. It's always a case of just trying to see if it's the best way to do it. And I think that's where organizations in our space and certainly in the IT providers, that's where they'll win is by being a little bit more consultative and not being order takers. And, you know, unfortunately our industry has been littered with failures of order takers and with a perception that, you know, an IT vendor or IT partner is that's all they're there for is to do some kind of fulfillment.
Yeah.
And that's rapidly changed. Certainly in the last 6 to 8 months, we've seen a massive change in customers saying, just
help
I can't do this by myself. Help me, you know, and it's refreshing because often you offer your opinion and it's not taken because, it's not needed. Now it's needed and it's refreshing to see that.
Okay. So this COVID situation may have actually had some positive impacts in that it's led to more engagement between you and your clients and probably healthier discussions about what IT
absolutely yeah. Even if you look at ourselves as a recipient of the COVID problem, you know, initially it was a dip in our business from, you know, the infrastructure that we provided, the on-premises infrastructure, but our consulting side is booming, our cloud services side is booming, and now our enterprise hardware and infrastructure is taking off because people are having those conversations again and they're realizing the need to invest in these things. Yeah. IT was always, if you look at typically, you know, you mentioned earlier that how the CIO and the CFO possibly fought. It's because in the past, IT always reported into finance because it was seen as a cost center.
Yeah.
And finance was there to make sure that IT didn't spend too much money and to drive their budget down every year. Yes. And that's changed. The finance department understands that, you know, maybe implementing that new SAP module is very, very critical to the survival of the business. And that SAP module has to be installed on something, either cloud, on-premise, whatever the case may be. And then the users have to access that.
Yeah.
So the business benefits of having that technology is now being much more widely seen from a finance perspective. And that makes these programs like HBFS has they're much more palatable because people can see that, hey, you know, it's not just about a cost center. It's about how do we do this smarter and how do we get some relief now to get the projects in that we know will drive our business in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, so the conversations are definitely changing and that's a good thing. But Anton, let me ask you a final question before we wrap up. Given the difficult economic environment that we're in at the moment, and many companies are struggling, top line, bottom line. It's difficult times out there given the economy here in South Africa and around the world. What are some of the options that are available to businesses that have overspecified on their IT requirements and perhaps need to free up some capital given the tight conditions they find themselves in right now?
Thanks, Tank. And I think we covered them broadly already, but to summarize it, we'd always boil down to making sure that we understand from that consultative point of view that Jonathan's mentioned is why. Look, there's a common misunderstanding or misconception that financing or a finance solution or structured loans, etc., are meant for those without money. And it's certainly not the case. I think the important thing for customers and the world consuming tech is that it will always be expensive. Tech is transforming at such a rapid rate that all this new niceties that we have in terms of tech is costing a lot. And whether you finance it, whether you purchase it outright, whether you load it onto some more sensible consumption-based environment, the affordability of the business needs to be there, right? So it's an important thing for customers to realize that a consumption-based model doesn't mean you consume because you don't have the money. You consume because you have better things to do with capital, or your capital is locked up in a different project, because typically organizations don't want to go and spend big money on a depreciating asset, as simple as that. They want to be able to unlock the value from tech as they use it. So it's first to have a clear understanding of what the customer's roadmap is in terms of where they want to be, what kind of tech estate they have planned, which workloads they want to move. In many instances, we are seeing more and more shorter term requirements from customers where they need to reduce the amount of time that they will need a specific hybrid platform before they will eventually port into cloud. And then they might still consider continuing beyond that, because as we know, projects are often planned to end at a certain time and they have deadlines, and then another 6 months go by and another 12 months and another 24 months go by without you know it. And that's the kind of flexibility that we're looking after when working with our customers and partners, is to be able to adjust the model required, whether it's freeing up capital of existing overspend or over-provisioning, integrating that into a structured or a financed or preferably a consumption-based environment, and whether it's shortening or lengthening or extending that term to what the customer needs. It's all about finding what will work for them and being confident that we can pair up and match to what their true requirement is from their tech estate. Because ultimately, we need to all move away from the upfront discussion to the more holistic problem that the CIFO, the CFO and the CIO are battling with, in terms of my tech estate starts on day one and it might last for 5 or 6 or 7 years. They need partners that are with them and vendors that are with them throughout the time, right? Cradle to grave solutions. And what flexibility and consumption models do is they take care of the end as well. They take care of the growth, the flex up and the flex down. So whether it's more traditional finance, whether it's consumption based, and whether it's the very important matter of how do I address a very aged tech estate at the end of term, I need to make sure that it's let go of in a responsible and an economical way. That's what we're about, and what our partners are about, to make sure that we find the right fit wherever that technology is in its life cycle.
Well, an excellent summary there today, there from Anton, of a fascinating discussion. Anton Pau is, of course, finance area manager for HPE Financial Services, and he was joined by Jonathan Kropp, who is CEO of Velocity Group. Thank you both for sharing your valuable insights with Tech Central today.